Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Above the Bar podcast, where each week we belly up to the bar with a new guest, find out what they do, who they are, and what makes them great. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Alrighty, folks, welcome back to the Above the Bar podcast. It's your host, Sean. We have bellied up here. What day of the week? Oh, it's the 17th. God, I forgot what day of the week it was. So it's April 17th. We've all somehow still survived eclipses, TikTok being canceled. But as the news told me this morning, not hundreds, not thousands, billions, but trillions of cicada are about to wake up and take over the world. So just another apocalypse here on planet Earth, and somehow we're all going to make it through it. But to help us figure out how, for some godforsaken reason, those of us that have served in the military, done our part for our country, all those kind of things, how we make it through and handle the stresses of eclipses, cicada, new careers anytime we really want to, and all these kind of things. And I forgot to ask him where he was at, but he'll tell us where he's at here shortly. And I'm going to butcher everyone's last name.
You won't be John, the first.
Don't worry about it. John E. McLaughlin.
You didn't butcher it at all. That's good.
Is that it, McLaughlin?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, see, you know, it's the Mick in me. It's the Mick in me getting it right. You know, we have that effect, you know. It's from the motherland, so we'll go with it.
Exactly.
But thanks, John. I didn't ask you before the show. Where are you at?
I'm in D.C., Washington, D.C. I'm in the D.C. National Guard. And when I got out of active duty, I went to law school at University of Virginia. D.C. was the nearest big city. So I worked up here during the summers and ended up settling here afterwards, at least for now.
So you're a Cavalier?
I am. It's one of those things where grad school, my real allegiance is Florida State. That's where I went to the undergrad. So that's gotcha. Where I was. But UVA is my next choice. If they're playing each other, it's FSU. But otherwise, I'm pulling for UVA to win.
That's interesting to go from a Seminole to a Cavalier. That's really, like, if you really break that down, like, you really.
They're different vibes.
They're definitely very different vibes. And then you break down the mascot vibes. I mean, you're on a whole nother thing going on right there.
They both have horses, so there's that.
We can go that. And they shot at each other. So we have that also going on. Well, let's go ahead and get into this real quick. Before we get going too far, let's talk about our sponsors. But we'll start with Big Board behind me for Sticker and a Cause. So if you've got something you're supporting, maybe you wrote a book, you've got a podcast, you've got a band, I don't care what it is, you got a local club and you want to hear about it here live on the air, reach out to me on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitch, X, Instagram, TikTok. Even our emails, the Above the Bar Podcast. And now we have our website, theabovethebarpodcast.com, where you can catch past episodes. You can leave us messages. Let us know what you think about the show. Reach out to us there. Let me know what your cause is. I'll tell you where to send that sticker to. We'll get it read live here on the air. But we've got to talk about our sponsors also, because that's who's paying the bills around this place. Our sponsors are Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. There's a lot of windows in D.C. You know? We're going to talk about D.C. here in a minute, because I grew up in Baltimore. So,
yep. Yeah. I saw that Ravens thing behind you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you can be both a D.C. and a Ravens fan. It's not like
– I mean, you can.
One team never – if D.C. ever makes the playoffs, then maybe we'll have to deal with that conflict. But for right now, there's no fear of that happening and us playing each other.
This is true. This is true. But as Nate said, back to Sticker and a Cause for a minute, Steeler stickers are not allowed. That's not a thing around here. Don't mail that to me. It's just not going to work. But back to Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. Budget Blinds is the nation's largest custom window treatment company. They are the largest window treatment company in the capital region of New York. They particularly cover Rensselaer, Columbia, and Greene County. So if you've got windows, I think most of us do, unless you're living in a cage, and even your cage needs windows, reach out to them. They even carry, and look, this will fall right into some of the stuff John's did. They even carry a line that I tell you to go look up called Crime Safe, with the way the world is going to hell in a handbasket, look up their CrimeSafe window treatments. These are custom window treatments that can actually like stand up to like baseball bats, saws. You can't pry them open because of the way they're set up. So they've got everything you could ever need. Once again, that's Budget Blinds of East Greenbush, Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. Let them know that you're there to belly up to the bar, and they're going to give you a 15% discount off your entire order. All right. All that's done there, John. So,
all right.
How are things in the nation's capital?
They're pretty chill, honestly. Back around the pandemic and when George Floyd was killed, things in January 6th, things were much more eventful, a little more stressful than they are now. But things have sort of settled in.
Yeah, I would say back during those times, things were definitely a tad more stressful in that world. Just a bit. Now,
yeah.
When I think of DC, I think of school field trips, growing up in Baltimore, having to go to the mall. And the greatest thing was freeze-dried ice cream. Have you ever had freeze-dried ice cream, John?
Yes, of course. It's been a minute, to be honest. But yes, I had my rite of passage.
Where'd you grow up at then?
So I was born in Texas and grew up maybe one-third down there and two-thirds up here in Northern Virginia. So gosh. I had similar trip experiences coming into the city for various, you know, see the Smithsonian, go to the National Zoo, see the pandas, all that good stuff.
Got to see the pandas.
Exactly.
Which I've determined is by far the dumbest animal on the planet is a panda. Like,
they are so chill. You can tell that they don't have, and I'm pretty sure this is true, not my area of expertise, that they don't have any natural predators. They just sit there and eat and fall off of things, basically. Right. Don't appear to do a lot else. It's like they're retired from being an actual like wild animal.
Yes.
Kind of hanging out.
I mean, but for any animal that just is like, I don't care. I've watched the videos where they take their babies away from them. And when they take their babies away, they'll just hand them like some bamboo. And they're like, oh,
no. That's funny. Because all the other videos are like animals, like doing everything it takes to defend their kids. Just. And like recognizing when they're at a zoo and like the kid has to be taken away for some like medical treatment or something. When they bring the kid back and the animal is immediately, that's all that you expect a human parent to do. I haven't seen that. Pandas are just like, whatever.
Pandas are just like, oh, cool. Yeah. Like, absolutely. Nate said, panda is my spirit animal. It just, I mean, these pandas are just like, yeah. Welcome to Panda Hour, folks, where we're just going to talk about dumb shit about pandas for no reason, because we make left turns around here. But so I just want to get, like, make sure I got your background correct here. So I'm looking through my notes here. Army paratrooper, 101st or 82nd?
101st. Well, 173rd, actually. So
where they
Italy, and no offense, it's not Italy that you could get stationed. But as soon as I found out that Europe was an option for being a paratrooper, I called up the branch immediately. I was like, hey, you want me to re-enlist? I could be convinced, but I could be convinced a whole lot more easily if you send me here. And
that's not a bad deal.
I was active duty because they made me leave Italy. They're like, you're going to Fortune. I was like, you can stop right there. I'm going to join the National Guard. And that's what I did.
I mean, that's Northern Italy too, wouldn't it be? That's
halfway between Venice and Verona.
Venice. So let's talk about Venice for a minute. I'm assuming you've been.
Dozens of times.
One of the coolest stories that I have about Venice was I was there in 96. We floated and we were there in 96. And we went to this bar called the Devil's Forest. And it was, if you know where kind of the ships come in and where you would be able to walk into Venice from there into like the actual city of Venice, I can still remember you come in that section, make a left, and it's one of your first alleys on your left-hand side as you go in.
Interesting.
Group of Marines, we all went there. So a friend of mine's wife, and you'll understand this, and we're going to talk about this here in a moment, she works for some three-letter organizations and was going. And folks, if you don't know what a three-letter organization is, take a moment, go look it up, figure it out, and then come back to me. But so she works for some three-letter organizations. And I said, hey, while you're in Venice, see if this place is still there. Sure as shit, she sends me a message. established 1994, the Devil's Forest is still there in Venice. And it's just a bar.
Y'all didn't cause it to close down. I'm impressed. A little surprised. Brother.
What the coolest thing about this place was, you could bring your own CDs in and they would play them on the radio inside of the place.
Interesting. Choose your own tune.
It was great. I love it. So you end up over there. So how long were you actually active duty Army before?
9 years.
How many?
I did 9 years active. That entire stretch was in human intelligence as an Arabic linguist. And then that's kind of the make a decision point. Once you start to get towards 10, you're like, am I going to do 20 years of this or am I going to switch it up somehow? And after they passed the GI Bill, I was like, you know, I've been to Europe for years. I went to Iraq once, Afghanistan once. I kind of done the big things I came here to do. And I, even more than that, I was like, if I stay in an airborne infantry unit, as satisfying as it is in a lot of ways, I am going to die alone. Like, there is nobody for me to date. I was not interested in that fate. So
a Wookiee, you could date a Wookiee if you wanted to.
I mean, there were options. They were just not necessarily what I was looking for. So
just not good ones.
Yes. So wasn't, you know, there weren't really options at all, to be honest with you. I'm being nice, but it was a handful of folks. And that can lead to people trying to force it. And like, right. Well, we're single, we don't hate each other, so why don't we do this? And, you know, that is not an ideal set of circumstances to base a marriage on. So all the arrows in the direction of leaving full time. So join the National Guard. I've been in the National Guard since. I should say nothing I say is on behalf of anybody but me, not the military, the government, anybody else but me. Mandatory disclaimer. So I've been in the Guard since 2012. So a little bit longer than I was full time. And occasionally I've done full time duty while in the Guard, but I've been in the Guard. Now I'm in the DC Guard currently.
So I want to go back. So you are like, I always thought I lucked out with duty stations. You know, I was like, you know, hey, I like Lejeune. I don't care what anyone says. I remember being a young Marine and not understanding what was so great about that place. And then you go to Lejeune and you realize one side is Topsail Island that everyone wants to vacation to, and the other side is Surf City that everyone wants to go to, or Atlantic Beach, Emerald Isle, like all these places where everyone wants to go to. And you're like, I don't want to be here. And you're like, then you realize you're like, wait, everyone wants to be here. This is like,
maybe there's a reason for that.
Yeah. There might be a good reason, but let's call a spade here, brother. You went to the linguist school out in Monterey also.
Yep.
So you didn't have no bullshit.
I was not interested in that. And luckily I didn't have to, because sometimes you don't have a choice. You know, you well know, particular jobs and particular branches, you only have maybe like two or three places you can go, and none of those are Italy. So I was lucky as a human guy part of it was volunteering for things. And that's one of the things that ended up getting in the book when I wrote it eventually. And I was just willing to volunteer. And I thought it was going to be a fight to get a slot in Europe. I'm like, this sounds amazing. I'm sure everybody in Europe was asking for this. I called up Branch, the HR people, for those who aren't familiar with the term, and said, hey, this is what I want, if you want me to reenlist. And they said, okay. I was like, what? I was like, I thought I had a big list of reasons. I was like, I'm going to make my best case. But it turns out that they had trouble, persistent trouble, finding intel people and signal people, which for any non-military viewers is like computer repair, basically communications. Like they couldn't find those people to volunteer to go to airborne school or to go to Europe. And I learned when I went out there that like a lot of the younger dudes, they just want to be close to home. And
yeah, I see that.
Some of the folks with kids, you know, you got younger kids, you want to be near grandma and grandpa. I get it. But I was ready to go out there. And some of the dudes who were out there, they came to under, it was interesting seeing which of the younger dudes came to it. Cause I went out there, I was like 26, right? Which is not old, but it's not young, certainly not in the military. So I had some experience under my belt and I was ready to appreciate the opportunity, but it was interesting seeing which of the younger dudes embraced it and which ones were constantly sort of like complaining about this, complaining about that. Yeah, Italy, it's gotten a lot better. I went back for my fifth anniversary 2 years ago. But they would complain like, oh, this isn't on time, this is unorganized. I'm like, yeah, but look at all the cool shit
you right.
got. Like, yeah, it's not perfect, but like you need to find the bright side. And it's not like you got to look real hard. Sometimes people tell you to find the bright side and you're like, listen, now is not the time. Let me sit in my pissed offness a little bit and I'll be with you
let
in
me
an
stew.
Hour or a day or whatever. Like, give me a minute to process this. But no, Italy was not that kind of place. Like, people should have had the perspective from the jump. But no, I was very fortunate with where I got to be stationed. And as soon as I was not going to get to be fortunate anymore, I went to the National Guard where I got an amazing amount of discretion over where I got to live and serve. And it's been an amazing experience.
And folks, as I'm talking to John, if you're more curious about the things he's done, you can definitely check his website, johnmclaughlin.com. And McLaughlin is McGlothlin. You can see what he's got going on and what he's done. You can also find his book, which we're going to be talking about here in a moment, How to Deal with Damn Near Anything, The Paratrooper's Guide to Life. I am going to ask another completely random question. Well, actually two. One.
I already told you everything I know about pandas, so.
All right. E or O?
E.
Okay, good. Oh, look, do you see what just happened on my screen?
Fireworks.
So I just learned this. There's an entire list of hand gestures you can do. Do me, you know the rock and roll devil horns?
Yeah, of course.
Hold two hands up like that right now. Just hold them up. Just give it a moment. Is it not doing it? Is yours off? Maybe yours is off because look.
Are you going to get some cool effect? What the hell?
Yeah. Yours. You must have yours off. And then if you do this, watch this.
I'm not going to get that. Okay. It's like
and then if you do this.
Back in the day.
If you go like this.
Nice.
And if you go like this.
Well, I got nothing.
Yeah, folks, if you're wondering what I'm talking about, I posted this on our Facebook page that there's hand gestures associated with all your social media like FaceTime and Zoom that you can do, and it brings different stuff up on your screen. But so you answered that question, which I'm glad. But the random question is what is the chances that you know another airborne guy be around your age, but he was an O named Jesse Somers?
I do not.
He would have been an O. Okay. Only reason I asked that is he's a buddy of mine.
People while I was enlisted.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine. This is his company here locally in the Albany area, and he was a JAG also.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Why I asked that. And he owns New Scotland Spirits. So all that being said, but so you're doing this. We're 9 years into it. We leave. You head off to DC area. You're at University of Virginia, you know, Cavalier. When does the whole like book idea even cross your mind? Like, I'm gonna write a book.
Pandemic. So it wasn't for 7-8 years after I got out, which I think is a good thing because I'd never planned to write a book, and I'm not hating on anyone whose goal was to write a book immediately. You know, maybe they had something to say immediately. For me, it took some time because I didn't really understand the story, the part of my experience that was useful to other people. So I get out of the military, right? Or it's funny, my National Guard people love hearing me say that. It's like, come on now, I do this one weekend a month. Like, am I in the military? Yes. Am I in it? No, not the same way. So when I got out of full-time military, I was like, all right, I'm gonna go to school. It's gonna be great. And it was. I had a fantastic time. I got to be a student again. It was amazing. GI Bill was very generous that our country gives us that kind of benefit. So I was very, very thankful for the experience. And plus, I got to do whatever I wanted for large parts of the day again. But
back to doing your own thing.
Exactly. And it was great. But what I did not do a good job of was adjusting to both whether the law school environment or just normal life. I was way too judgmental, way too sarcastic. And
what do you mean? Hold on a sec. What do you mean by judgmental and sarcastic of what?
No, of people, of everyone. So law school, don't get me wrong, a lot of law school is hype. It's just school, right? And if you're borrowing a shitload of money, that's a different kind of stress. And I'm not putting judgment on anyone who's in that position where they have to do amazingly at school to get the kind of job that will pay off their loans. I would advise people not get in that position. I don't think it's worth it, but I get it. But a lot of law schools stress comes from folks lacking perspective. And a lot of the military experience is matched up with facing physical danger, but that's not the part that I'm talking about. Yet I did deploy to Iraq and Afghanistan. My main job was to go on patrol in both those places. It wasn't necessarily to kick in doors, but you know, I'm not a stranger to being on raids or cordon and knocks and searches either. So I'm somewhere in the middle in terms of intensity of experience, but that's not what translated the most to me. And that's not what the people around me were lacking. It wasn't that they hadn't almost died enough. Right. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that they hadn't been taught a type of resilience, a type of, I don't want to say coping, because a lot of the book is about that. But usually people associate coping with something bad having happened to you. And now you got to cope with it. I'm talking about dealing with everyday challenges in everyday life. Nothing bad has to have happened yet. It's just how you deal with everything that comes at you as just part of being a functioning adult. And I saw a lot of people who were smart. And they were good socially and they had everything going for them, but they were just stressed out by everything, even things they shouldn't have been. And they, at first I was holding them to the military standard, to the airborne standard. And
what you knew?
Yeah, the infantry standard, which was like, I was around infantry guys and I was led by infantry types, even though I wasn't one. So I was holding them to a standard they had never been asked to be held to, like, which was unfair to them. And it came from wanting the best for them and thinking they were capable of more, but I didn't have the perspective to present it that way. So it just came off as being very judgmental of them and me thinking they suck because they did suck at certain things. But instead of taking a step back and thinking, it's just like you meet somebody in the military and they're not good at something. The answer is, why aren't you good at it? Who was supposed to train you at this thing? Did they train you? If so, why didn't it work? Like thinking about it practically, I was just kind of reflexively like, y'all shouldn't be stressed out by this. They got into a great law school. You're going to have a great life unless you mess it up. Like, fate has been kind to you. You need to take that and move forward with initiative and move forward from a positive place, even if life isn't going to be positive every day. And I'm very sarcastic. So I'm not suggesting people get out there and smile through it all necessarily. You can do stuff and complain and you're still doing stuff, right? You don't have to have some like upbeat attitude about everything. But people were getting knocked off course really easily. And it was because they hadn't had the type of environment of self-development, of professional training that we'd gotten in the military. Of
that structure.
Yeah, exactly. Teaching people to become their most effective version of themselves. And this is stuff, you know, being in an airborne unit, we've got people who are like airborne infantry. Their job is to jump in and be capable of fighting and closing in on the enemy immediately. And then we got people who are just supply and dental and signal and all these other jobs. And they're having to kill people. Shit has gone sideways, very, very sideways. So the types of values I'm talking about, the types of skills I'm talking about, the traits is what I call them in the book. They were universal among that. You didn't have to be infantry to have them. In fact, you were expected to have them no matter what your job was. You're expected to be just as effective at what you did if what you did was administrative. Because as you well know, like, bad admin can screw up everything. If people aren't getting paid and people aren't getting promoted and the supplies are going where they're not supposed to, like, that is just as damaging as somebody being out of shape. If anything, it can be more so. So these are things that are applicable to everyday life, even if you didn't have to be a badass for a living.
Yeah, that'll wreck morale right away. So you're out there, and it's funny that you say these things because it's very similar to my own personal experience. When I retired in 2014, I brought and the one thing you just said that really truly rang true with me was the mindset of, well, let me show you what I know. You should show me right away because I need to see it. And I was doing that on the outside. Yeah. And I actually got told by somebody in a senior leadership role, stop doing that. People think you're arrogant. And I'm like, what? I'm just showing you what I know. It's what I'm supposed to. And they're like, no, not out here. Act like an idiot, even if you know everything, and let somebody explain it to you. And then be like, oh, really? That's how it works? And then they'll think they trained you to do it. And they'll do anything in the world they can for you.
Like, so, all these memes, I found that all these memes you see out there about transitioning to the civilian world, a lot of them were true. Some of them, I mean, we like to complain. Sometimes you catch people and like, hey, it's not that bad. But a lot of these memes are very accurate when it comes to how you have to reshape things. But it's my job. It's our job to do that. We can't expect the world to reshape itself around us. Like we have, you know, when you're in the military, everybody around you is in the military too. And it is not good training for coming out where we don't realize what an exception that is to the way most people live their life. And it is, if you're the person that's the exception, it's your job to figure out how to build that bridge to everybody else. You can't just sit around and be like, why does everybody else not understand me? You got to try to find a way to balance it where you can still get to show your strengths off, but in a way that other people understand and are drawn to, or at least neutral about, instead of being confused by.
So you're in your book, you come up with these five key traits. Were they based on, and I know this might sound silly to ask it this way, but obviously did you base it on like paratrooper values, or was this just straight army values? Where did you set like, hey, these are the traits I'm going to go with?
Because it's a mix. Mostly it came, I bet that most veterans will find them to be fairly universal. But the reason the paratrooper angle is there, and the reason that I framed it that way, is because it is at a higher standard there. And these things exist in any good military unit, right? You can go to the Coast Guard, and I'm sure that, I mean, they're doing crazy stuff in the water, right? They've got their own set of challenges and their own high standards. So
my son's a pirate, so it's all right.
Yep, there you go. Like, so everybody, hopefully any good military unit will probably recognize these traits. But I found it to be the purest version in the airborne world because it's a mix of high standards, but accessibility. Whereas something like SF or any kind of special operations, that is a very specific type of person and a very specific type of mission. I know there's a couple different missions, but even, well, there at least you should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now it's mostly, you know, direct action, but that is a very specific type. And honestly, that's not necessarily a type of person or mindset that translates to the outside world. We don't talk about dudes that can struggle to bridge that gap between them and everybody else. There's a reason SF dudes like can find themselves struggling to relate to everybody else. So I have nothing, but I mean, I broke my elbow. I don't know if you can see the scar on video at SF selection. So I was, I was interested in being a medic there. So nothing but respect for that world. But just as I said, the parts of my life, my military career that were deployments were not the part I was using every day out here in regular life. So it was more about finding things. What I liked about paratroopers is, like I said earlier, we got the person who follows you out the door on a random training jump may or may not be badass in the way that people think. It could be some random person from finance, and they have to, gravity doesn't care. If you have some cool guy job and like a bunch of cool guy tattoos, like you could just be some random pack clerk and you're gonna fall off the same plane I am, you know, and you're gonna hit the same ground I am. So that's what appealed to me, is it's a mix of a high standard, but something that is accessible to anyone.
So you come up with these five different traits though, from that are accessible to every single person. But now I'm taking from some of the things you said, you're married now.
Yep.
So you were married prior to this book. I'm just doing some math in my head. Pandemic. Yep. When was that? So that's 2019 or 2018. So you go to your significant other and you say to them, hey, I'm going to write this book and I'm going to dedicate time to this. I'm always curious of the reactions from people. You know, what was their reaction?
Well, support in a sense, because I wasn't leaving my job to do it. I did end up taking this time off.
Like, I'm leaving my job. I'm going to sit down and bury myself. So it wasn't like you quit your job.
I did take a break because my job when the pandemic hit involved being on a travel team. I was a Pentagon contractor and we weren't doing any traveling. So I stayed there for a bit, but I was like, I'm not doing anything. It caused like confusion among the team because there's different ways to react to that. Like it can be frustrating to not be able to do what you want to do. We're all on this team for a reason. It's work that we value and we're not doing it, but you know what? It can't be done right now. Nobody's being lazy. Like nobody like is trying to undermine the mission. Like we just can't do it. Nobody's traveling. It just is what it is. It's pandemic. It happens rarely, but it happens. There were a lot of different ways people reacted to that. But eventually it's like, okay, I'm not doing a whole lot. And I'm very fortunate to be in a position where I've saved up some money and I can take a break and write this book. And then having a security clearance, having a law degree from a good school, I can jump back in when I want to jump back in. So I did take a break. And what I promised my wife when I did this was I will do the research. This is not just going to be a dude shooting from the hip. Like, everybody can go to their local bar and get the opinion of a random guy. Right. So there's got to be a little more going on here in terms of research, in terms of rigor, in terms of structure. Don't worry, there's got a guy next to you on a bar stool quality when that's helpful, hopefully.
The 90 for 94 rando paratrooper.
Yeah, who there are no charts in this book. Right. So don't worry. Like, there's no math in this book. And I like math. So it's approachable. But at the same time, I did look at I didn't want to write a book that was wrong. Like, I don't want to write a book that was dumb. So I did the research to make sure that the impressions I'd gotten, the stories I'd lived through and heard, actually matched with the research that had been done by professionals looking into this. So nice. That I made sure that it was legit enough to pass muster, because I don't want to put my name on something that's garbage, or even not garbage, just wrong or boring or useless. Like, if somebody's already written a better version of this book, I'm just going to buy theirs and then do something else with my life.
Right.
But from what I saw, this gap hadn't been filled. A lot of the stories were all about intensity, and I get it. I'm an intense.
The David Goggins books.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand that these, there's a place for that, but you can't just intense your way out of every challenge in life.
Yes.
The answer is not always more push-ups, waking up earlier, like being more about everything. Like, you've got to find ways to go. Like you said, you're familiar with this way of thinking, it sounds like.
Oh my God. Like I don't mean to pause you here for a second, but everything you're saying, like I like David Goggins. I listen to David Goggins, but like, listen, bro, I hear you. You had, like, if you read his first book, Shit Life, it's at a start. Some of it, as I listen to it though, when you dissect his book, you go, well, you are a fucking idiot. Like, hold on. Were there some crappy things? Absolutely. Was your dad a horrible person? 100%. Your dad was a straight turd. Was your, but how much was you? Like he definitely had like some things in there where it's like, yeah, I'm 100. So your book really focuses then on, hey, these are some life traits that I learned here that are mapped out for you. There's science behind the mapping out of these traits that when you apply these, I don't care if you're an underwater basket weaver or going to be a lawyer, we'll use your career. You can apply these traits. There's only 5 of them. It's not 15 of them. It's not, here's one for you. Bring you back for a minute. It's not JJ did tie buckle. Do you remember that? JJ did tie buckle. It's not, if you don't know,
I got a complex acronym to keep track of this.
Yeah.
We've all known dudes in the military, and maybe at times been that person, dude or not, who they're so intense. It's like, if you weren't in the military, you would probably be in jail, right? The common joke. But I'm not trying to distill that essence and spread that to people. The people I knew in the military who I respected the most were the chillest. The kind of people who, like, you could throw anything at them, they're like, I got it. Like, they solve problems, they knock stuff out. Like, they can solve other people's problems. They can take care of business. That doesn't mean they might solve a problem for you, but then they're going to have a talk with you about how you don't need to be bringing them problems anymore. They can find that balance between holding people accountable, but also knocking things out when it needs to be done. So that's what I'm trying to distill in this, is the problem solver aspect of the military, not the intense last chance, now or never, like, survival instinct type.
You're a bitch. You suck. You'll never be anything. Get up and put your running shoes.
Okay, have you seen these military-esque camps that these poor dudes are paying to go to, where they just get yelled at? Like, bro, that is not the military.
Bro, have you seen the one that's $18,000 and, like, guys are low crawling up hills? And I laugh at this crap because I'm like, listen, for free. As a matter of fact, we'll even pay you.
Join the guard, man. You just go do it for like 10 weeks. I forget how long basic is now, but like, do it for like the blink of an eye, and then you can be in the actual military with some actual benefits, and then you just got to do it once a month in a 2 weeks.
It's not going to kill you in the guard. Trust me, folks.
Yeah.
Like, of my 20 years, I was a recruiter. I was a career recruiter, trained recruiters. I cannot tell you how many times I had idiots walk into my office and be like, So, like, I don't want to join the Marine Corps. I just want to go to boot camp to prove that I could do it. And I'm like, so you would go to football camp, do 2-a-days, and the first game just walk away and be like, I don't need to do this. I already proved I can make the team. And they would look at you like a deer in headlights, like, what? I'm like, yeah, that's what you just said to me, kid. Get out of my office. Like, that was real. Listen, folks, that's a real thing we do as Marine recruiters.
Especially the Marines are doing
great. Get out of our office. Get out.
The standard speaks for itself, right? And you want to be able to, like, it's, you know, some of the recruiting challenges, people are like, oh, the military this, military that. Like, no, like, you have to meet a certain standard to join. And yeah, whether it's physical fitness or it's mindset or it's 100%. Other, like, you know, people aren't necessarily meeting that standard. That's what I tried to bring with this book is a lot of the military stuff I see is like, you, basically they're asking people to pretend like you're in the military, like these bullshit yelling forces, right? No, you don't have to pretend you're in the military to learn from it. You can take little bits and pieces. It can be a small chunk, right? Yeah. And that can enhance one part of your day or one particular relationship, personal or professional, that you're trying to figure out how to navigate. Like, you don't have to put it on like a body, like a hazmat suit, like a mop suit, like, and wander around in level four. Just little bits and pieces can be super useful. It can be the seasoning, not the whole meal.
Well, let me ask you this question. And look, folks, if you're interested more after John and I are done here and you want to know what he's got going on, his website is johnmclaughlin.com, and it's mcglothlin.com. You can see what he's got going on. So I'm curious your take on something. I'm listening to a book right now called, I'll have to find it. I'm probably going to say it wrong. It's actually written by a rabbi, and it's business. I think it's called Business Successes from the Bible. And it's very interesting because it's not one of these things where he's like, so Joseph said to Mary, it's not one of those kind of situations. He's like, no, do you see? It's like words like, I didn't know this, but Cain means, Cain means like to gather or something like that in Hebrew, and like makes perfect sense because he killed his brother to keep everything for himself.
Gotcha.
But he talks about this, and I'm curious how a book like yours, because we put it into our terms where I'm assuming you have the same mindset as I do. Because of my time in the Marine Corps, I feel like everything I do, I earn. I earn it all, and it has a value to me. How can somebody who, or what can somebody who maybe, you know, we see it all the time, these snotty kids or people who are handed things. I never loved a toy that was handed to me as a kid. If I saved my money and I bought it, I wanted nobody else to touch it because it's mine. My money was into it. How can somebody take what's in your book and apply it as a term of, hey, you're going to earn each of these five traits as you apply them?
Well, a lot of the book boils down to the first trait is self-awareness. And the idea behind that is having an accurate view of yourself, and that allowing you to make progress in other areas. And the satisfaction you're talking about of earning things, to me, comes from taking a look at yourself and thinking, I want to get better at X and Y, and then doing it and realizing that you can change your circumstances. And that doesn't mean you got to be rich. Doesn't mean you got to have a six pack. Doesn't mean you got to have a mansion or be king of whatever. Like, a lot of the military books are about leadership, and I get that because it's something almost every person, if you're in the military for like 6 months, you will find yourself in charge of some random 18-year-old. And you're like, okay, when did that happen? Right. So I get that a lot of these books are about leadership, but I'm trying to get people to focus on being in charge of themselves, not other people. It's not about necessarily the impression you give other people in the sense of wanting them to like you or respect you. It's about listening to what they have to say and what it says about you, that you can learn, that you can improve yourself. You get yourself right, and all of these external things will happen for you, or at least the odds of them happening will go way up. But it's not about the book. I say this expressly in the intro. It's not about how to teach someone to be a good person, a moral person. I think that's important, but that's not what I'm going for. And it's not about leadership either. It's not about, like, I read one famous special operations guy's book. I won't put him on blast personally, but it starts off with, like, I almost got my whole team killed by making a mistake. It was like, well, I hope that like Bob in accounting doesn't get his whole team almost killed, but you know, because he put something wrong in a spreadsheet. Like the intensity angle again. But for most people, the problem is not that they are not intense enough. It's something a little more subtle, a little more not. It's difficult to identify only because people haven't been given the tools to identify it. So to loop back to what you said, the satisfaction of earning something, I totally agree with that. The military is great about giving us that. And the way that I try to bring that to people in the book is by having them take an honest look at themselves and then realizing that through that honesty, that's where progress lies. And you don't have to become a totally new person. The standard is so low for improving yourself that if you get marginally better at a thing that annoys people will be so impressed. Like, it's not even that hard. You have to become like the best ever at something. But if you can become 10% less annoying at a thing that's annoying, or 10% less lazy at a thing you're lazy at, that is a lot of progress, and there will be very real benefits to that. So that's what I'm trying to bring in terms of the value of ownership and earning things.
So that's what you're talking about when you say those inner traits, you know, for facing what somebody's got going on and being able to kind of address those things. So you get the book together, you get it written. What was some of, like, I always tell people, I have a book, it's about 5 or 6 chapters done, and I haven't touched it in years. And I drive around and I think, I should go back to that. And then I go, I don't know. I'm not ready to write it. And I understand completely about that. But I just have to do this for a second. Just because this is
making me jealous. World.
But what I'm curious about, though, is what was some of the reception of the book when you first started handing it to somebody and saying, hey, do me a favor, read this. I want your honest feedback. What were some of the reactions you were getting back from it?
Well, it's funny that you start there because that's a challenge, right? Because nobody wants to tell you your book sucks, right? Because people recognize what a lift it is to write one. But also, people need to tell you if your book sucks. So you don't write a book that sucks, right? So how do you balance that? So I tried to pick people who knew me well enough and had the right personalities to give me real feedback. And the feedback was good. I'm lucky I had writing experience. I used to be a journalist and a speechwriter and a freelance writer. So I knew the basics, but it's all, as you know, knowing a little bit about something is dangerous. It's like people who show up to basic thinking, I know how to shoot a rifle because I've done it 5 times.
Right.
Right. Or people who've never done it are like, tell me how this works. And they're ready to learn the right way. So I had to be careful my experience didn't bite me in the ass. But having enough writing experience to have, I've taken feedback before. I've had to delete things I'd spent a lot of time on before. I was used to being edited. And that was very helpful because that can be, writing is a personal endeavor, especially something like this. So the feedback was good. I needed to make sure that I had, people wanted more examples and less, not less analysis, but more, they wanted the things that illustrated what I was talking about. I had the analysis piece in place. Like, hey, this is what works for people. This is why the military does it. This is how it relates to regular life. Bada, 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 done. But people are like, hey, when you told that story about that guy that got kicked out of the tower at airborne school when he was too scared to jump at himself, that really made it real for me. Let's put some more of that in there. So that was the biggest change that people requested was more stories, which, because I was worried about too many stories, and I ended up with the first version of having too few.
Isn't that who we are, though, as service members, is we've got a story for everything. And when we get out on the other side, we realize that somebody's like, yeah, my little brother, such and such. And we're like, dude, I got a story about them. And then you realize you're like, I've got.
But all these stories are workplace appropriate either. So you really got to figure out like which ones to tell at like which times, which audiences.
That is using been such which, a challenge for me. Like somebody.
Which level of profanity is appropriate for any given
circumstance. And folks, we're getting so close to closing the bar. I just realized what time it was. This is definitely one of those ones that's running away from me. It seems to always happen when I talk to other service members, because I know we're supposed to be talking about the book, John, but I want to be like, so dude, where was like, you speak Pashto, correct?
And not as well as I used to.
I was going to say, cause like you're a whole story in of itself, airborne in Italy, linguist. I only in my entire career, I'll put it this way, in my career as a recruiter, I only ever had one person pass the D lab. And then they said she couldn't be a linguist because She was an American citizen, but her parents were born in Poland. Even though Poland was a NATO country at the time.
That's dumb.
Yeah. They said, nope, she can't get the security clearance because her parents were born in Poland. They had been naturalized citizens. They were citizens at this time, but because they were born in Poland, they would not give her this. I think they are actually dual citizens, U.S. and Polish citizens. And they were like, no, you can't have this. And bro, when I say she passed it,
she crushed it.
Absolutely was like, yeah, no, I got this whole thing. Don't even worry about it. I'm going to eat this thing.
Oh man, I hate stories like that so much. Like they just changed it for a quick non sequitur because I know we don't have a ton of time. Like, so they used to be, if you didn't weigh under a certain amount for your height, right? So you're like I'm 5'9". So you get 170 or 80, 90 pounds, so depending on age. If you didn't weigh that much, you had to get taped. And the tape test was weird because everybody's got different shaped bodies. So how do you tell?
Right.
And so you have dudes working out their necks to get like the biggest neck possible. It's so dumb. They finally changed that. So if you get a certain PT score, physical fitness score, you are exempt. You can weigh a million fucking pounds.
Yes.
If you can actually do the job. And I mention that because we got rid of so many good soldiers, like Pacific Islanders, who are just built like fire hydrants, but they can run for days and climb anything. They're just badasses. But we got rid of them because of dumb bureaucratic reasons. So I hate hearing stories like the one you just
had.
I hope that somebody got their head out of their ass and changed that at some point.
Who knows? Well, it's funny that you would tell that. I can't tell you how many times I saw in my time in the Marine Corps go from, nope, it doesn't matter what your PFT score is. You got to be this height and weight. If you're not within the height and weight regs, it doesn't matter. That general leaves. A new general comes in and is like, look, I don't care if you're, you know, like you said, built like a fire plug. I had an old CO. I still talk to the guy. His name's Dan. He just turned down being a general so he could get out. And he's like 5'9", 5'10", 224, 4% body fat.
Yeah, one of those types.
Just a monster and a meathead as meatheads go. And he's like, I've never made weight. I've always had to make tape. And it's like, because we would tape, like you could pass the PFT, you could be overweight, but we're going to tape you and see how big your neck is. Like, does your neck go out past your ears? I always made weight, but I was always that guy that I was like, if I had a tape, we're so fucked in every bit of it. But, and folks, if you want to talk about, we'll talk about that later. We're going to talk more about the, get sidetracked in the service when I talk to other guys, because these are our experiences, folks. And look, if you want to know more about John's experiences and what's on his website, and I meant to mention this earlier, I love that you used 8-bit graphic stuff all over your book and everything, because I so feel that, because I think a lot of times what people miss about what we do in the service is it kind of is an 8-bit world in a high graphics world. We break things down so far to that Barney style of teaching and explaining to people. And I feel like, you know, with your book, it's not so far over people's head to where they can't be like, oh, this is how I apply these traits. This is how I can do this. And there's a million self-help books, folks. If you want to read David Goggins' book, David is probably a super nice guy. I'm not that intense.
I'm worried about it. Every time I see him, I'm like, are you all right, man?
He's the kind of guy to me that is constantly fighting some demon.
Yeah.
And he's never gotten over it, but he writes amazing books, tells great stories. I love his book. I've read it. I was like, all right. And I love the fact that he talks about that you shouldn't be motivated towards things. You should be obsessed with things. I believe in that. But at the same time, you gotta have a strong foundation. And I feel like your book kind of gives you those traits that, if you want to be obsessed, here's 5 traits, work with these 5 things, get these things in your life, and you can do that. Now, if somebody was grabbing your book, and again, folks, the book is How to Deal with Damn Near Anything, The Paratrooper's Guide to Life. And what would you say? Obviously, the 5 traits are in there, but is there any one of the 5 traits that you would say, or maybe you wrote it in this order for a reason, where you would just say, hey, you've got to start this one, this is going to be your big challenge trait start here and then let's move forward.
All right. Well, I already gave you the first one, self-awareness. We'll skip to the end. Well, no spoilers.
Well, tell all five of them. I mean, I want to hear all.
All right. Well, I'll do the lightning round. So mention self-awareness. You got to know where you're at if you want to go somewhere specific. You know, like Google Maps, you got to know your own location. Doesn't matter if you know where the restaurant is you're trying to get to. Next one is initiative. The idea that you have to act with incomplete information, make imperfect decisions, that even making a mistake can be better than doing nothing. Then there's adaptability, the idea, okay, you learned something, you made a decision, maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. Now you have to use that information to change your plan. We get so attached to the plans we make, sometimes we prioritize the plan over what the plan was actually supposed to achieve. So don't be so formal like that, be willing to change. And then the next one is efficiency. You mentioned obsession. You could be obsessed with some things sometimes. You try to be obsessed with everything all the time and you're just gonna explode in this fiery ball of stress and drama. So. It's all about finding ways to be, you can be super intense. I'm a very energetic person. So I'm not saying everybody needs to be chill all the time, but you need to be efficient. If you try to throw every punch as hard as you can, you're going to end up face first on the floor, right? You've got to know when to put maximum effort in and how to do it in the right ways. And then the last one is insistence. And that is my way of capturing having standards and boundaries and enforcing those standards and boundaries. And you got to understand, other people get to have standards and boundaries too that may not include you. So it's not just about you being God in your little world, throwing lightning bolts at people. Like sometimes you got to understand other people get to have a say also, but respecting that they do that and understanding that you have to do it too. So those are the five traits.
But of the five traits, I mean, is there any one that you say, like, I would say it's your fifth trait. I think. For me, that would be where your first spot is, but I could also see where the self-awareness, you know, could be a first. But what would you say for most people as they read this? Like, yeah, you wrote it, but is it, I guess the best question is it linear the way you wrote it? Like, hey, these are the traits you start.
Don't get me wrong. You can dip in if you think, hey, I'm strong in this one. I'm good. Then man, I really need to get better about efficiency. Like I try real hard, but I don't feel like I'm getting results. I already know that I need to try. I am trying, but I'm not getting there. That's where efficiency can come in. So you can jump, but there is a step-by-step nature to them. So they are best understood in order, but you can look at one in isolation if you think that's something you particularly need to focus on. But yes, to pick one, I would pick the same one you did, the last one, insistence. Having standards and ensuring that you set and honor and meet those standards and enforce boundaries with people. Otherwise, even unintentionally, they will push in on space that you need to keep for yourself.
I guess you got to go rewrite the book now, John. Sorry.
Jesse. Yeah. Version two. People are like, it's funny to see people like, do you have a second book? I'm like, nah, not really. like this is kind of like. When something is successful and the book's been pretty successful, like people are like, oh, you got another one. It's like, this kind of is the lesson, man. Like I want to apply it and help people. And I'm actually working with an HR company to turn it into a block of training that people at an organization can bring me in for a morning. But no, I will happily tweak any follow-on stuff I do based off what we discussed though. Like, hey, it's not a holy book. It can change. Like, so I'm always looking to incorporate new lessons into what I'm doing.
Well, I'm going to put you on spot then for a little bit. When you talk about a second book, what about a book about, like I read, what was the name of the book I read that was actually about the linguist who was down there in Cuba. He wrote a book about being a linguist in Cuba, and he started off like he was like a school teacher and then went to Monterey, learned Arabic, and then got stationed down in Cuba and went through this whole process of watching how the military did interrogations. But the book was about how what he learned from, like, hey, this is how the military does it. It's very much the beatings will continue until morale improves style. The CIA did it in this way that was very, black ops, you know, things you hear in books. And then there was this third one that came in, and it was, I want to say she was NSA. It's been a while since I read the book, but she came in and she was an NSA and he was supposed to sit there, and she was very like, did everything to make them feel uncomfortable while at the same time wanting to talk to her, like came in dressed professionally, but also at the same time in a skirt, sat down a soda on the table and had a conversation, and then would be like, anything else before I leave? And they would be like, just verbal vomit.
And she wasn't the most intense person. Was
no,
she
was. And that's what kind of reminded me about your book. And I'm thinking about this other linguist. And then that's your role. You guys have to be very attentive to what is coming out of someone's mouth, the tone in which it's coming out of their mouth. Because you have to be able to translate that over to somebody who doesn't speak any of these languages. I'll tell you a funny afterwards about a kid I put in the Marine Corps, and I wish he was around. He's still alive, but he's just not. I don't know how to get a hold of him. His name was Rami Abdelmasiya. Rami was Egyptian and did not speak the same dialect as everybody else in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they were like, "You speak Arabic, right?" And he's like, "Huh? Yeah, Egyptian." And they're like, "Come with us." And he's like, Gunny, I'm trying to tell him what these people say. And this guy's saying a word that I'm like, egg? I don't know why is he asking for eggs? And it meant something totally different in Egyptian as it would have meant in a different dialect and all that. So
I have the benefit of starting from scratch and not having any prior knowledge to overcome when I came to learn in Arabic.
That's awesome. Well, I got to get this. So Nate was on for a while. I love Nate. Nate's a good buddy of mine. He wanted to know, and Chili Mac. Like, I don't even get it out. What's your favorite MRE? So you're a Chili Mac guy, huh?
Oh, easy. Right. Especially if you get the, what was it? The jalapeno cheese.
Jalapeno cheese was gold.
This is not like a hipster choice. This is widely liked meal. But yeah, sorry for anyone who's just listening. Nate asked what my favorite MRE was, and the answer was definitively Chili Mac. And you would try to find the one person around who had weird taste, and they would get M&Ms, be like, "I don't like M&Ms." You're like, "You don't like M&Ms? I'm gonna be your best friend, so you can give me your M&Ms every single day." Like,
yes. See, for me, it was beef stew. I love the beef stew, but if you could get beef stew and get the jalapeno cheese at the same time, and you would mix the two of them together, and then your cracker, then you take one pack of crackers and jalapeno sauce, or the Tabasco sauce, your little bottle of Tabasco, and then mix the two of them together real good. Absolutely glorious. But I'll tell you, welcome to Food Hour, folks. The other thing is how were you taught to open your MREs? This is a very important question. From the top or from the side?
Top.
Side.
That side's better. I learned eventually, but that was one of those unofficial things, like, I don't know, replacing boot laces with 550 cord.
That's a good one.
I didn't like, eventually you're around people who are doing high speed things and you're like, that seems like a better version of what I'm doing. I'm just going to stop doing it the way I'm doing it and hope nobody noticed that I was doing it that way. And that everybody just didn't pay attention till I
I always think about my drill instructors being like, open it this way and being like, okay. And then realizing like, oh, I didn't stick my dirty, nasty hands into my food that I'm now going to stick into my gullet. So
when they started getting side zip duffel bags, were you around for that?
No. So we were Alice packs forever. And then when we deployed one time, we actually tested a pack called a vector pack.
It didn't make it.
I will tell you what did make it out of the vector pack is the day pack. So the vector
little sub bag or whatever you want to call it.
Right. So when we tested the vector, all of our vector packs had day packs attached to them. So it was a pretty good sized bag. But what made the pack so great, and I wish I knew where they were and to get one, because over 20 years it was the best bag I ever carried, because the bag sat on a slide system, so you could actually unscrew it, slide the bag all the way to the top, and screw it back down, and then it would sit super high on your shoulders.
Yeah.
And it was so comfortable to walk around in. And it was nice because if you were going to do ski related stuff, you could slide it the other way. So it sat lower on your body, which is where you wanted it if you were doing skiing or mount warfare.
Interesting. But I never did any of that stuff. So that's cool. That's interesting to hear. It makes sense when you say it, but I would have never thought about it on my
own. Well, that was one of the big differences. Like, and you probably got a lot of Marines in your guard unit because for some reason Marines think that we're just going to go over to the guard and we hate it because it's not the Marine Corps. And we're
But
it's not. And we're like, I don't understand it. But a lot of guys, I'm trying to think, like, this was a long time ago. Like I said, this was 96, 97 when they gave us those packs. But that was the birth of the day pack, was kind of going from the butt pack to the day pack and running around with these things. They made such a world of difference. Brother, we're going to go over a couple of minutes because I don't care. It's my show. This is what we get to do. And anytime I get to talk to another service member, it's always a pleasure for me. Anywhere where people can, like, do you have any upcoming speaking engagements? Because I know you've done a lot of this stuff. Any speaking engagements, anywhere people can find you or how they can interact with you?
Best way to find me is on LinkedIn. And you can hit me up through the website as well. But if you search for my name or the title of the book, you will find me on LinkedIn and grab a copy of the book on Amazon. I am not hard to find. It is literally john@johnmclaughlin.com. So as you see at the bottom of the screen, or it is as you heard my name, John@my full name is the best way to find me. But LinkedIn for upcoming stuff, like you mentioned, speaking engagements, that kind of thing. The LinkedIn is where I post all that sort of info.
That's awesome, brother. Well, look, and folks, coming up here real soon, and I'll ask John here when we're done, keep an eye out on our website. We're going to have some real changes coming up. We just got the website up and going. With that being said, we're going to be adding affiliate links here soon. So you'll be able to find all these books when people come on. Quick, easy links to everything they have going on. So make sure you're staying tuned and getting yourself affiliated, putting it on your favorites for the AboveTheBarPodcast.com. Next week, we have a gentleman coming on. Everybody knows I love talking to actors and Hollywood folks. I have one rule for any of those guys, John, and it's a super simple rule. If they ever, when they walk the red carpet, they have to invite me at least once. Nobody's invited me. They all suck, is how I look at that. But we have a gentleman coming on. His name is E.R. Ruiz. He's an American actor and a burn survivor who's played on Gillian on FX. He was on Sons of Anarchy. He's done a bunch of different stuff. So looking forward to having E.R. Ruiz on next week, because I always love telling those guys, because there's so many of them out there that you're like, what show were you on?
I know. Actually looking up now. It sounds interesting. I'm going to look into his background.
Yeah. So we're going to have E.R. on, but, I know you binged all 231 episodes of this show before this, John. You're well versed twice. See, that's what I'm talking about. You know, you have enough time. You could do all of them. This just becomes, you know, it's like your what's those things where people whisper into the mic?
I know what you're talking
you
about.
Know, so, but it could be like that for you. Just play the silky smooth sounds of my voice. Welcome to the Above the Bar podcast. It's your host, Sean. Go ahead and get yourself settled into the bed right now and ready yourself. See, I think I got a voice for that shit. I could do that.
I think so.
I mean, it's a possibility. Another career choice. Again, one of those great things about being in the service.
People ask you about a second book. That could be your second podcast.
It could be my second podcast. It's just me going, all right, we're going to go ahead and pop this bottle of bourbon open. And you can listen to me pour a glass right now.
Late night radio vibe.
Make sure, again, folks, you're checking out what John's got going on, johnmclaughlin.com. But again, I know you've binged all these different episodes. You're all completely prepared, so you know what's coming up next, which is, before we close, the guest always gets the final word. So what's the final word for tonight, John?
Final word is hidden. There's a hidden side to the military behind all the intensity, behind all of the combat stories, which are real and important. There's a hidden side that can teach a lot of different people lessons on how to improve their day-to-day life.
Alrighty, folks, be sure to push your stool in. This has been a Second Front podcast presentation, found on Apple, Spotify, and wherever podcasts can be found.